It's time for the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pete Zimmerman produces the show normally on Wednesdays. Terry Savage says hi, but here she is on a Friday. Hi, Terry.
Good to be with you on a Friday. I want to see if you're more relaxed on Friday. Are you? I am.
Let me think about that for a second. I think I'm always nervous and a tense wreck, but maybe a little less so on Fridays now that you mention it. Especially when the weather's like this. It's been too warm for some of us this September, but fall's a lovely time of year. My birthday's in 18 days. It's all good. It's all good.
That is all good. Okay, and the market's just sort of holding its own in the midst of some potentially scary news, I mean, out of Washington, and even the economy. So I think it's very interesting because, number one, we got, well, first of all, we had news today about inflation, which is a 30-year high jump from year over year. Inflation up 3.6%. That's the core inflation. Let's not get into the details. The fact is inflation is here, and sorry, Jay Powell, so much for transitory. And then, you know, as you know, we've been reporting politics out of Washington. Now, we are not going to have a government shutdown because they passed a budget resolution to keep the government going. But that wasn't the only big crisis looming. The big crisis looming is the debt ceiling, the moment when the U.S. cannot afford to pay its bills for money it's already spent.
Right.
You know, Treasury IOUs wouldn't earn their interest. That would be a crisis. So then Congress is still sitting there discussing Infrastructure A, Infrastructure B, and tax increases. So I got to give the market a little bit of applause. It's up 300 points here, and it's not panicking.
Although I wonder if you just say one other thing about inflation, which you said was the highest jump in 30 years, year over year. Is that apples to oranges since last year was 2020 was sort of the asterisk year for a lot of numbers, or is that a real number? Does that matter? 3.6.
You know, I think that's a real number because that's prices people are paying. So that's why I said let's not get into what's core and who lives without food and energy. There's a couple of things happening in the economy that mean people will pay more. I'm dreading the gas bills this winter. You know, natural gas prices, which are always the least expensive way to heat your home, are going to soar this winter. I think you can plan on whatever your average monthly bill was last year. At a minimum, it will double.
Really?
And, oh, yes.
I'm sorry, Terry. Why is that? What, natural gas prices have gone up?
Futures, I mean, the actual, you know, gas prices have soared in the last month or two. And it's, you know, oil prices are up, energy prices are up. Natural gas has its own set of issues. But before, I'm going to get people upset at me, but before we decide we better phase out energy, oil, and gas, we better think about how we're going to run our factories or how much we're going to pay for our home bills. And natural gas has some problems with ports and shipping of liquid natural gas and with Europe. And so, but even right now, if nothing changed, your home heating bill, if you heat with gas, this is an easy prediction to make. I'm worried that it might be three times as high, but for sure, it will be twice as high. So if you paid $300 last a month, or in the winter it went up because it was cold to $485, you can count on it hitting close to $1,000 this year, a month in that month.
Wow, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm glad you told us that. Be advised. Also, FAFSA forms this season begins today, right?
This is my annual, I title the column the same thing every year, FAFSA, the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. And that used to start later in the, I think it used to start in January. For many years I wrote about this. But they moved it up to October. And every Illinois high school student, and actually someone called in, I think on Steve Bertrand's show earlier this week, every Illinois high school senior is required to file FAFSA. That doesn't mean their parents will cooperate. There's the student part, and there's the parent part. It's a strange thing because the form asks you to reveal not only your income, which you get immediately using a retrieval tool that gets your most recent tax return, and a place for you to say, but wait, I lost my job since then, if that's changed, but also your assets and how they're owned. And some things don't count, like your home and so forth, but other assets, especially assets in a child's name, a custodial account, weigh very heavily against you in the aid formula. So this is the moment, and the the reason to do it, you can read my column. There's a link to FAFSA, FAFSA.ed.gov, where you can learn more about it. Because even though you don't think, you're saying, there's no way we'll ever qualify for aid, that's not true. A lot of federal aid is based not on need. There are some programs that are scholarships that require the FAFSA, even though it's free money and not a loan. So every high school senior should file FAFSA just because. And there are some state aid programs that are given out on a first-come, first-served basis. So you want to fill out the form, and then you'll be listed. Then you'll get back what your family's expected contribution will be. Then you have to start thinking, how do I fill the hole? And then this is the point to say, well, maybe maybe you'll get more money at Harvard than you will at the University of Illinois. You won't know until you file these forms, and then you make your applications and send the information to the schools. So don't procrastinate on this one. It could be costly.
Terry, shall we pick up some phone lines?
Let's do that. I love that.
Okay, we'll start with you, Ruth. You're on WGN Radio. Hi, Ruth. How can we help you? You're on the air.
Hi. Well, a question for Terry. Does the fact that Biden shut down the Keystone Pipeline play into the higher heating costs, or is it related to the higher cost at the gas pumps? Or, could you explain that a little more, why heating costs will be going up?
Okay, well, first of all, I was just trying to get you some facts. First of all, half the homes in America are heated by natural gas.
Right.
And it's a global market. In Britain, they are literally shutting down factories already for the lack of natural gas. A couple of days ago, the headline was that natural gas prices are up 180% year over year. Of course, last year was a weak year, and we still had to heat our homes, but we didn't have a lot, the economy was slowing and so forth, so there was less demand. There was less demand for airlines flying for, oil and fuel and so forth. But something's going on that we ought to think about. This whole issue of energy and green is really important to the planet. I acknowledge that. But what you're seeing now from oil companies in particular, who've been targeted by advocacy groups, a couple of them just announced they're going to maybe return capital to shareholders in the form of dividends instead of investing in new capacity or drilling new wells. The Permian Basin in Texas is I sat on the board of Pennzoil for a couple of years before we sold the company to Shell. So I, for a while, became a minor expert in natural gas, and then I sat on the board of Devon Energy. So I followed that field, and the fact is these companies always consistently invested in finding more gas. And now we're depleting our resources. The carryover stocks this year are very, very low. All around Europe, there are all these plans to end domestic fossil fuel production in the coming years. And so a whole bunch of things are coming together that are restricting supply. There's port shortages, and they have to transport gas in a liquid form. And there's dislocations. And it may not just be for this year. It may be that we are telling ourselves, we got to stop using gas at a time, or energy, or fossil fuels at a time that we don't really have the green energy sources in place, and we could be in a crunch.
Yeah, well, the prognosis sounds dismal, I would say.
It worries me.
Yeah, I'm sorry I brought it up. I'm sorry that this, I don't want to.
Well, that's a big philosophical question, but the practical question is, no kidding, you could have at least double the energy bills, the natural gas bills this winter. I mean, like right away, coming up in the next few months. So budget for that, everyone.
Yeah, that's how it's going. What am I going to do except budget for it? All right, thanks for the call, Ruth. Good luck to us all on that. And thanks a lot, Terry. Let's see here. Anthony, you're on WGN Radio. Anthony, how can you help us?
How you doing?
Hey, go ahead. What's your question, Anthony?
So my parents were born in Mexico, and I have an opportunity to get dual citizenship, and my question is, if I buy something in Mexico, what are the tax implications here? And I'm doing the dual citizenship so that when I buy something in Mexico, I don't have to pay an extra tax there, so I don't want to have to pay it here.
I'm going to put you on hold. Stay right there. Your car's a little noisy, so we can better hear Terry. But dual citizenship, what about the tax implications?
Okay. If you are an American and you own foreign assets, there's a form you have to file called FATCA, Foreign Asset Tax something or other, Foreign Asset Tax Compliance Act. So even if you own it, and I'm trying to remember, I think it's over $25,000, but pardon me for not having that exactly on hand. You have to file every year the fact that you own assets outside the United States on Form 8938. Don't ask me how I know that. And I just looked. It's $50,000 to be reportable. Okay, now I don't know whether you're going to have income from that and what the tax implications would be if it was like if you're buying property and it's rental property. That you're going to have to consult a tax, your own tax accountant for that. But I know that if you own it and it's outside, whether you're a dual citizen or not, if you're a U.S. citizen, you must report that on Form 8938.
What about this, Terry? What if you're just going to Mexico because you can travel back and forth and purchase in both places? You just purchase items because the tax or cost is lower there.
Oh, that's a different story. U.S. has, we have, of course, you have to declare purchases when you come back. So don't plan to buy a $25,000 watch without declaring it. You would get caught at the border. But you can go back and forth and shop from in Europe. Lots of people do, and I'm sure that some of that stuff doesn't get declared. But that's different. And being a citizen doesn't, even if you become a citizen in Mexico,
right,
for the convenience,
right,
of not dealing with their forms and so forth, it doesn't relieve you as a U.S. citizen of the obligation to report to the government that you have the asset. Now, this is different than from reporting the income. It's Form 8938 that's attached to your income tax return. But even if you had no income from this, it was just a property, a house. You know, you bought a condo in Acapulco or for something like that. You would still have to report that you have an asset worth, if it's worth more than $50,000. Okay?
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Pete Zimmerman produces the show. Brett Jackson's engineering today. This is John Williams. It's 12:37, and Terry Savage, our Wednesday guest, is on the line. We're taking your calls and reading your text at 312-981-7200. Terry, can I bounce a couple of texts off you?
Sure.
Hey, Terry Savage, should we look at solar panels on our roof? See what you started? Various companies come around. I've looked at the Better Business Bureau before about contacting them, but I wanted your opinion. I don't want to pay for installing them, so it'll depend on who I would contract, of course. There used to be government programs to help for the installation of those, but what do you think or know about that, Terry?
You know, I would imagine, and I'm not sure if there is still a subsidy.
Yeah, there was. I know they lapsed in a lot of states. Depends on who was in favor at the time. I used to do commercials for some of these people, so I'm not an energy expert like you, but I knew about solar panels, and a lot of those costs were defrayed for people by the government. But I think in Illinois, I don't think those funds are still available.
Wait a second. So one of the nice things about my new... Do I sound better? Do I sound as sexy as you? You know, you guys set me up with this wonderful headphone thing, which leaves my hands free. And I am... I just Googled solar, just because I'm not an expert here. But I Googled, are there solar panel incentives? And there, it turns out that you could be eligible for incentives in Illinois. So here's just a fact that I'm pulling right off solarreviews.com. Solar panels have fallen in price by more than 80% in the last 10 years. I'm shocked. And they also remain subsidized by a 26% federal tax credit. That I didn't know. So I would ask you to do a little research.
Sure.
It might be an interesting thing.
Yeah.
But one of the things I do know about solar panels, having discussed that, is it may not actually provide all or exclusively all the energy that you need. Because do you remember that? I remember doing this years ago. We had a November where one of the news stations actually sent a crew up in a jet plane to prove that there was sun up there. It was in November where we went like 46 days with no sun. So I just want you to think carefully about the fact that it might not be the only source of energy you need. And I'd have to do a little bit more research, but I gather there are still federal tax credits. And as the person who texted said, the most important thing is dealing with a reputable company. So I respect the BBB, but I would also suggest you get references and check them online to see if there are complaints about XYZ company. That is something I do now whenever I'm going to hire anybody. I just search for, are there any complaints about this company? And that will be a good source of information for you.
Hey, Terry Savage, I'm working full time. And my spouse, who is self-employed, is on my health insurance. He's turning 65 soon. Is there a good source to help us evaluate what he should do for health insurance next year?
Yes, absolutely. Look, there are so many ins and outs. I usually try and give you free resources. It depends on how big your company is, whether your company may be his secondary payer when he goes on Medicare. And the decisions you make at that point at age 65 are so critical. I'm going to give you a website. This is a service you would have to pay for, but I think if it saves you from making a mistake, it would be worth it many times over. The website is 65incorporated.com. 65, the number. Incorporated.com. They're in Wisconsin. They're really smart people, and they help you decide how to use your current existing insurance if you continue to work or your spouse's insurance. They do not sell insurance. It's Diane Omdahl, O-M-D-A-H-L there. I've used her for many columns. All the financial people use her. It's I'm looking at their website. Unbiased, expert Medicare guidance, one-on-one consultations. They help you through open enrollment.
What do they charge? Do they charge
It's a couple of hundred dollars, maybe a little bit more, depending on if it's complex. I can't remember exactly, but I would suggest that you go to them because so you spend $200-$300. I don't really know what the price would be. The cost of making a mistake, oh my goodness. So I don't know anybody else that does this in this way. Unbiased, they sell nothing. 65 Incorporated, the number 65, the word spelled out, incorporated.com.
Question for Terry Savage. Given the current dip in the market, Terry, is this a good time to invest? In other words, let me finish. Is this considered buying low time?
Only in hindsight will we know if this is buying low time. So if you're a long-term investor, the odds of you ever catching the exact bottom of the market or the top of the market are a zillion to one. So it depends. If you're young, this is low because you've got 20, 30 years ahead of you. And if America survives, you'll look back and go, wow, that was low. I can look back to opening IRAs in the early 80s when the Dow was under 1,000. So, yeah, if you're investing for the long run, then set up a plan, put the $300 a month in your IRA. You can buy the whole market, the S&P 500 stock index fund. Yes, it's very highly tax weighted, but you could just buy a mutual fund like that or an equity income fund.
What's your best horizon on that though, Terry? Like, would you say that about 5 years out, 4 years
out?
Well,
I know for a fact, there's never been a 20-year period where you lost money in that diversified portfolio.
I know, but I want to know how close to today you could get that would say, yeah, go ahead and buy an index fund now because the market will be better than it is now.
You know what? My horizon is till the close today, which is a couple of hours. If you're trading, the question is, do you have the discipline to stick it out? Nobody times the market perfectly. If they did, you know, CNBC wouldn't be in business with experts that say, well, not now, or buy this, or don't buy that. The fact is, I find, you know, I was a trader on the floor. I found that a fruitless game. I would go long this, and then I would go short that. I was always very balanced. I know that over the long run, being invested is really important because not only do you not lose money over the long run, but you stay even with inflation. In all those 20-year periods going back 100 years now, the market has always outperformed inflation, dividends reinvested.
Yeah, yeah.
So even if you're 71, you're going to live probably another 20-some years, you need a component of your money invested in the stock market, just a smaller proportion. So don't ask me to time the market. I have the answer, honest answer is, and the savage truth is, of course, I have no idea, and neither does anyone else.
Terry, when do you think the market's going to get better? How would you time it today? Oh, wait, I'm not supposed to do that. All right. Terry, I'll talk to you next week, maybe Wednesday, huh?
That would be wonderful. I will be on for Wednesday.
Terry Savage, terrysavage.com. It's 12:45. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. We've got more business news. We've got Steve Ruxton. No, wait.
Yeah, I think so.
We've got Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A private investment firm has bought the Lou Malnati's pizza chain. Meritage Group is buying the company from the chain's owners, including BDT Capital Partners. The Malnati family will keep a stake in the company. The chain has more than 60 restaurants in Chicago and the suburbs, as well as in Indianapolis, Milwaukee, and Phoenix. Boeing has announced a donation of $1 million to Hispanic and Latino support organizations throughout the U.S. The funds will support organizations that work to strengthen appreciation for Hispanic and Latino history and culture. It'll also increase STEM education curriculum in underserved schools and advance Latino-focused leadership and workforce development programs. Boeing's donation will also fund an additional 24 organizations that provide support across 11 different states. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food and Steve Alexander.
You know what they say, Johnny, you can never get enough Steves, right? October is a horn of plenty. I heard you mention earlier today it's National Pizza Month. There are over 20 foods being celebrated in October, and I will run through the long list of those on Monday, in addition to also the return of the McRib sandwich. Today, though, it is National Homemade Cookie Day. Chocolate chip for me, though. And is there anything better than the aroma of freshly baked cookies, maybe freshly baked apple pie? Is that the aroma in your house right now, Jim Fizzell?
Yes.
Mr. Fizz's wife, Jane, is a prolific baker, and Jim's only complaint is that, well?
It's so bad because Jane gives 3/4 of it away.
But that isn't what Mr. Fizz wants to talk about today. The stretch of great weather we have been having is great for the garden.
So stuff is in pretty good shape. You should still be picking beets and carrots and broccoli and tomatoes, yellow squash and zucchini. And if you planted new beans or leaf lettuce or Swiss chard for a fall garden, when we talked about it earlier this year, those should be coming in right now. And they'll go very nicely until it starts to freeze. And in fact, we need to be collecting blankets and bed sheets and old things like that, not plastic, but things that can be put over the garden if we start to get damaging frosts overnight. Because after a night or two of frost, it usually warms up, and we can have continuing nice weather for days or even weeks later if the garden is protected by covering it during those couple of nights. It's going to be winter pretty quick, faster than we want to, and we need to be prepared for that.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell. By the way, I had a couple of people ask for the website I mentioned yesterday where you can load an app that will connect backyard gardeners who have too much produce with food banks, in this case, the Lakeview Pantry. The app can be downloaded at freshfoodconnect.org. At the Chicago Board of Trade, traders are still reacting to yesterday's existing supplies report from the USDA. Wheat is trading 28 cents higher at $7.54 a bushel. Beans are down about 7 at $12.49, and corn is trading about a nickel higher now at $5.42. That's the business of food, and don't forget to bake those cookies on 720 WGN.
Listen to this statistic. More than 40% of U.S. workers want to work remotely full time. So it's pretty good timing then that Neocon, North America's largest workplace design expo, is this week, October 4th and 5th. They're all getting together at Merchandise Mart. One of the people that's going to be there is Jonathan Webb, the Workplace Market Director at KI. KI.com is their website. Jonathan, you're on WGN. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good afternoon.
I guess you're not surprised by that statistic, huh? You must be well aware.
Yeah, you know, the hybrid workplace is certainly a pretty constant theme lately in the contract furniture industry, and it's something that we're having conversations with our clients about just about every single day.
In other words, how to design what, a place at the office or a place at their home to make people work more efficiently?
A little bit of both, but for most of us that are attending Neocon and exhibiting at Neocon, we deal with contract office furniture. So, you know, we're working with our clients to make their workplace welcoming as they begin to welcome their employees back to the office and whatever mode that is. You know, for some clients, it's going to be mandated, right? They're going to have people come back 5 days a week, and for some, they're going to allow a little bit more freedom of choice in terms of where they work and how often they come back to the office. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no steadfast rule about the hybrid workplace, but there are some rules changing in terms of what the workplace looks like, because we've had to deal with so much over the last couple of years. You enter into the fact that the technology game has changed so much. We've all gotten to be video conference experts overnight, and organizations are trying to catch up with the fact that, you know, they still want to have their employees collaborate and work together and do so in a way that is really being most productive for every single company out there. And that's the name of the game right now, is what can we do to influence a positive workplace setting that really allows organizations to maximize that productivity.
You're talking about efficiency. I didn't hear you talk so much about safety. Are we going to come back to offices with plexiglass barriers and arrows on the carpeting? or has that thought kind of passed?
It has. You know, really interesting. When this whole thing first went down in 2020, our industry had this thing, we joke about it today, we called it the great acrylic shortage, because you couldn't go into a restaurant or a gas station and everybody had these plastic barriers up. And quite frankly, it led to some supply chain issues of getting acrylic. You know, early on with COVID, organizations, I think, were really big on dividers and that kind of thing, kind of creating bubbles in between individuals. But, you know, I've seen that trend lapse quite a bit. You know, we're blessed as a country to have these incredibly wonderful vaccines out there now. And they're, you know, obviously there for everybody that wants to take it. And quite frankly, as you kind of look at the trends, and, you know, I'm not a COVID expert, but it seems like we're starting to turn a corner a little bit. So, mm-hmm. You know, that's all good news for organizations that want to get people back in the office. And, you know, it's not really about dividers and so forth anymore. It's really about creating spaces that infuse a culture of ideation and interaction, because quite frankly, you know, a lot of us have missed that the last 18 plus months, you know, the ability to be face to face and to really, really engage with each other on a very personal level.
Jonathan Webb is the Workplace Market Director at KI. KI.com is their website. Director of Workspaces, outfitted workspaces for Amazon, Disney, Microsoft. And I'm glad to hear all of this. And it's good that folks are getting together this week at the Merchandise Mart, October 4th and 5th. Jonathan, thanks for joining us, and good luck over there.
Hey, thank you. Look forward to seeing everybody next week at the Merchandise Mart.